don't just have a pile of clean clothes in the corner and then a separate pile of dirty clothes on the floor. And you're like, okay, make sure to put the dirty clothes with the dirty clothes and the clean so they don't get mixed up.
Yeah.
Don't undo all your work.
Don't want to end up wearing that same pair of underwear three times accidentally.
No.
That'll get you some looks at the office.
No. Will it?
Probably. You
get some sniffs at the office.
Well, I mean, like, when they sniff it, then they'll look. As somebody who a number of times would watch my dad go down a grocery store aisle and then silently fart right in the middle of it and then leave the aisle, and then me, I would, like, sneak up and check the reaction afterward. Everybody was certainly looking at one another.
A fart is way more active than...
Underwear.
Dude, when you are around someone with some BO or who hasn't changed their clothes in a while, it's pretty rank. It's like rotten eggs.
I guess I'm lucky I don't work with people like that. I only ever notice bad breath.
That's weird because you do work a job that I feel would kind of lead to people being sweaty and kind of mucky all the time. So I feel like I'm
just not very close to people. Luckily. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense.
There is the one guy who just so very visibly uses the same shirt multiple days in a row.
Oh, that's always fun. See, I'm like always in close proximity, small rooms with people all the time. Yeah. So when somebody's having a real bad gas day, they're not hiding it from me. It's just like, yeah. And the courteous thing to do is to obviously like, all right, I'm just not going to say it. There are a couple of times I've literally had to step out of the room and just be like, no, I've got to go just be outside because I need to breathe air that does not have fecal particles in it.
Okay, we're getting that SoxCast energy back in.
Welcome to the SoxCast episode 183, the one last desperate gasp for good taste left in the world of media consumption. How y'all doing?
I'm feeling that intensely.
You're feeling it intensely? You got that good... You've definitely got reason to have a lot of good vibes going lately. Certainly I've got some
pretty good vibes.
A lot of things have gone pretty well for you. Not for me. Good Lord. I ended up with the dreaded COVID. I managed to avoid it for 6 years.
Pop that cherry.
Man. I avoided it for 6 years, and all it takes is one dumb neighbor coming up to talk to you and then say, oh, by the way, I'm getting over COVID. Oh! And literally like 3 days later, it's like, having trouble clearing my throat today. Hope that's not indicative of anything. Wake up the next day, it's like, boy, this cough really freaking hurts. Man. So that's me. Like, I've spent I spent a good 6 or 7 days in the COVID mines, which is probably why I've still got like a bit of the residual like sinus stuff, and I am hovering over that cough button like it's a military exercise. But man, I don't know how people deal with it because I'm fully vaccinated, and that shit still like knocked me on my ass worse than anything. Like, I've done. We did a game of the year 1 year where I was recovering from a really bad respiratory infection. This was the pre-COVID days, if you can imagine those. Mm-hmm. And I felt worse than that. Like, I was just out on my ass. Just this is the worst sickness I've experienced in so long. Even in 2024, when I was sick through 90% of my break, I didn't feel that as bad as I felt with COVID. And it's just like, if that hit me as hard as it did and I'm fully vaccinated, I don't even want to think about how I would feel like if I weren't. Because that was just, no thank you, ma'am. You can keep that shit.
Wasn't fun in 2020.
My God, yeah. I remember you got that right when we were doing Game of the Decade. Yeah. That was, remember you telling stories of walking around just pouring salt on your tongue to try and taste anything? I thankfully didn't get that. I didn't get a loss of taste. So
yeah, that's so demoralizing.
Yeah.
Were you sleeping okay?
Yeah, mostly. There were a few nights where it was just like, oh, I'm up every like 45 to 60 minutes. It's like, this is bad. But then like around day six, when I'm starting to get over the hump, it was literally like, oh, I literally passed out from 8 p.m. till 8 a.m. And it was like, oh, okay. That's what it finally caught up. We're good now.
I'm back in business.
We are back in business. But yeah, I've spent the last week now kind of enjoying some of the nice weather that's finally kind of started to roll in. We're starting to see the ass end of winter, though, because it's going to suck this coming week because we got another cold front coming in. Sort of like...
Yeah, we call that false spring up here.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were calling it here. It's like, I know this isn't going to last. And then you start looking at the forecast. It's like, yep, I knew it. But thankfully, we're mostly out of that pretty soon, so...
Mostly.
Mostly. How about you, Rhett? You feeling all right?
I mean, we got that snow last night. Like, oh, yeah, nice 60s all weekend and snow on Friday night. God. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
What is this? This is not normal. They don't write about this in the Bible. I saw it thunder and snow one time, and that just, like, weirded me the hell out, because that is literally weather I'd never seen in my life. I think this was back in January, where it was like, why is it storming in January, and it is also snowing? What is happening? What if we have pissed Mother Nature off so much?
Yeah, I've really never heard of lightning and snow at the same time.
Yeah, it was the weirdest damn thing, but yeah... Yeah. So to my immediate virtual right, he's got an infinite supply of the white stuff. It's Rhett. What, like Oreo? What, like Oreo cookies?
Going to good use.
It's like Oreo cookies. You've got this whole bear. He's got this 45-gallon drum in his backyard that's just Oreo cream filling. He's not sharing.
That's definitely
it.
What it is.
That's absolutely what it is.
Scraped one by one from individual Oreos.
Yes, just like...
It's just an Oreo barrel that's perpetually on fire where he tosses the cookies. He's not interested.
Those damn cookies, it's just so hard to eat all of them. But yeah. I gotta get that white stuff.
He wants that white stuff. Everybody...
Not to eat, just to...
You just want it. But I think I speak for us all when I say we all want Rhett's white stuff. I mean...
The metaphor is falling apart.
It is. Come.
Yeah.
It's come. That's what we're talking. It's the whole thing is just a long come joke. Mm-hmm. It's all of us.
The entire Soxcast, actually.
This whole show. I think that if you went back and you counted up, if you categorized all the jokes that we make on this show, I'm going to say 70% of them. That's come joke. Another cum joke. There's like 200.
Call this podcast Cumtown or something.
Yeah, we should. There you go. That's the good rebrand we need. Pretty sure nobody's got that.
Nobody's using that, right?
Nah. Who would name their podcast Cumtown? Right? That's just silly.
I mean, besides us. 12 years of cum jokes made a glopping sound as it flowed endlessly into the listener's ears.
There you go.
Ear fucking. Now, there's a weird one. Strangely, I've seen art of that, and it's just like, that's as weird as it sounds. As weird as it sounds. To my media virtual left, international man of misery, it's John.
I'm not miserable.
You're
I'm
not.
Okay.
You're not, but it's the first thing that popped in my head. So that's how these intros work. It's always just, look, man, it's off the top. I don't know what I'm going to say when it's I roll into dome. These things. It's off the dome.
How about international man of hotness and cool?
Sure. We'll go with that. Sure.
All right.
Yeah. We made a couple of we made one glaring omission on last episode, if I could bring it up real quick. We didn't talk about Lunite Quest.
Oh my god, it's so fucking good.
Lunite Quest, the rescue of Himemori Luna, I think is her name. Yeah, man. Holy shit. Tom just knocks it out of the park with this fantastic arcade G&G like, and if you're looking to get into G&G, I think this game would be real good training wheels, because it's not as absolute
schools and ghosts for the uninitiated.
Yeah. It's not as absolutely mean and soul crushing. It's still pretty hard in all the right ways, but you know, it's really, really cool. Like
it's a comfy console port of a new Ghouls and Ghosts game.
Yeah, it really is. Like this thing is just the quality is beyond immaculate, and I felt so bad because we had so many things to talk about last episode, and that one just kind of like ended up in the no brain zone for some reason, and
afterwards we're like, oh shit,
we didn't talk about it. So I just wanted to kind of bring it up here to start. Just, man, that game is so freaking good. Like I was smiling ear to ear, did both loops, feels real good. Really, really good. It's like the last person you would expect a VTuber fan game from. But
and it all worked out.
And it all worked out. Like, you know, like if I were Luna and somebody made a game like that about me, I think I'd feel pretty damn good about it. As somebody who has had a lot of very cool games made about me, and sure. one of them I have a fart gun. as somebody yeah, who's had a lot of
those.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's cool. So I was thinking I might go ahead and go first here to get things kicked off, since I have you
bragged about your game yet?
I haven't bragged about my game, but I was getting ready to.
You should brag about your game, Polly.
So I released a game for John's RM2K3 Cookie Cutter Jam, which mm-hmm. we talked about extensively. Which
wrapped up beautifully.
And you ended up getting, what, like 54 entries?
58 as of right now.
That is insane, yeah. Dude. I remember
that last day was crazy.
I remember just being like, hey, John, is there a target number you want to hit? And it's just like, in my head, I'm thinking, he's thinking 50. He's got to be thinking 50.
I was thinking 20.
I mean, at the start, because by that point, you'd already had, like, I think close to 30 at that point when we did the podcast. But
yeah,
you know,
and I think on the podcast we even said John said there's no way it'll be 50, and I'm like, you wait for those last 2 days. I know how these things go. But even I was surprised, like, oh damn, they are coming in fast and furious right now.
Yeah,
I played 31 out of 58 of them so far. I have a spreadsheet.
I've played 23, I think.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
As somebody who was a notorious RPG Maker 2003 hater, I'm not going to say that I love it at this point, but I think that, like, I understand now. I get it.
You made your stance quite clear.
You made a whole game about making
There you go. I made a whole game about hating RPG Maker 2003. I released Tessa's RPG Nightmare, which is a game that I was like, the whole idea was just like, I don't like RPG Maker 2003, so I'm just going to make a character that doesn't like RPG Maker 2003, and she's been thrown into it, and this is her nightmare. And originally, the character was going to be me, but I just didn't like how that felt. So I just created this character.
Made up Tessa.
I made up Tessa on the fly, and like kind of like what her voice was going to be, and then I kind of just like... this game was just complete stream of consciousness. I didn't plan anything.
Really?
And it ended up being, I think, one of the things that I'm like most proud of creating, which is just crazy. It came together in about 7 days. But it's kind of like a spoof of, you know, RPG convention with a little something extra in there, kind of dashed in. I think I really liked how that ending sequence turned out. But for me, like, making that game, there were two points. One point was just like, there was one point where I felt like this is becoming more than what I feel like you would think of a game jam game to be, because it was just like, I keep finding myself going back and adding bits and adding gags or adding little running storylines throughout, you know, each chapter of the game where characters keep saying things differently in town and stuff. And then the other brilliant moment that I will forever just remember as a lightning bolt hitting me was, there was a specific sprite that I saw in the RTP editor that I did not know existed. And I knew exactly how the game was going to end. And I was just like,
I know. What,
yep.
I know.
It starts with a T.
It was just like, and the rest of the, and like, and I think that was like day two or three when I found that sprite. And I was just like, now I just get to have a lot of fun getting this character there and like just kind of building to that moment and how I was going to do it. And then like, thinking about, like, well, how do I want to do the final dungeon? Do I actually want to do combat, or do I want to do something a little funnier? And since it's a game where I was really leaning into comedy, it was just like, no, there's a very funny way to approach this, and I have to do this. It does not work any other way. Mm-hmm. And the moment when I played it back the first time, and I legitimately felt like I made a very fun, funny and cool thing, and it is perfectly paced, it is just a really nice shape start to finish, and I nailed the ending the way that I wanted to. I was just so endlessly damn proud of that stupid game, and I'm so happy that other people have been playing it and kind of coming to me and telling me the same thing. It's like, this is like legitimately funny. I had such a good time. And for me, it was just like, it was a flurry of creativity. Like every, like I remember stating on Blue Sky that when I started the project, it's like, I am dedicating every single second of free time I have to this project until it is finished. And that is exactly what I did. And I just like, I improvised the whole damn thing, start to finish, you know, going back over it while you're in the middle of it, like, okay, add a few new things here, add a few new things there. Oh, but it would be real funny if I took like an hour and implemented this one dumb joke. And there was so much of that throughout the process that I ended up with like a game that I'm really proud of. And I ended up with like, despite the fact that they're just default RM2K3 RTP assets, it's like, I think I have a couple of OCs I want to play with in the future now.
Yay. Yeah, no, there's definitely a intoxicating power to, oh shit, I have a new RPG Maker 2003 sprite OC that I care deeply about.
Yeah. Like, I can't see that sprite now and see her as anything but the character that I wrote. It's like anytime I see her pop up in other people's games, it's just like, oh, hey, it's you. Oh, no, wait, no, hold on.
Fuck, that's funny.
God, though, like, if you had told me years ago, like, you're gonna make a game and you're gonna be real proud of it at the end, and it's gonna be an RPG Maker 2003 game, it's just like, there's no way. And then it happens,
there's someone in the comments like, is RPG Maker 2003 that bad? And I almost replied, Tessa's full of it.
It's not as bad when you just make a game where you can just mash attack the whole time.
Yeah.
The fights.
Yeah. I think if you work with it, you can make the combat work really nicely for you. But
I think a lot of entries in this game jam actually proved that, is the fact that, again, I've played over 20 of them, and it's just like, a lot of them have combat, and it's just like, you know what? I get it. I know what they were going for. It just doesn't always feel great.
I think it's at the whenever an enemy animation plays out,
yeah,
it halts your input in the window, and that, so it just kind of feels like it's arbitrarily eating input. So that's what feels bad.
Yep. Yep. That just kind of.
Everything besides that is perfect. Everything besides that is fine.
But it's also got like, you know, I have an idea that is going to follow up on things where if you followed like a certain NPC's thread throughout this game, I'm working on a follow up for that. And I also have an RPG Maker MV project that I've been sharing with Iffy that's currently in the works. That's the idea for that one is I'm kind of marrying the idea of what people generally think of as a poly game with an RPG. So without kind of spoiling anything of what I'm going for right now, because it's still kind of like, I've already got like my characters and stuff created. Like, I've already got all of that basic stuff down. It's just a matter of like, I want to get better at mapping. I want to kind of like use this project as sort of a bed to do that. And this is
excellent.
Since it's going to be relatively short form, it's just like, this will be a good way to do that. So yeah, I ended up with a whole hell of a lot of things in the back pocket from having made Tessa's RPG Nightmare. And I think that's
a really good feeling, isn't it?
It really is. Like, I've not felt creativity like that in a long time.
This joy is just infectious. I thought it was really a really nice journey, Polly.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I really liked how the big joke of the climax. Thank you very much.
Yes. I'm real happy with how all that turned out. So
what was the name of the beach NPC?
Oh, Goku Vegeta.
Oh no, it was a different beach NPC.
Coffee Joe.
Coffee Joe.
Because Joe is a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So he's named Coffee Joe.
Where the hell is Goku Vegeta?
Goku Vegeta is the guy you get the hunter's license from. He's the samurai that's hanging out on the beach where you have to get the hunter's license.
I'll just say now, I was like, fuck is this Polly game? She begs me every single time I make a game, put a ninja in, and then I play Polly's game, and there's a samurai. What the fuck is this? Truly a nightmare.
It's truly a nightmare!
How many cookies have you played, Rhett? On your spread? Yeah, on your
spreadsheet, Rhett.
On my spreadsheet. Yeah, two.
What was the other one?
FGHHH, I don't know, the gibberish title name.
Oh,
Gurgle,
yeah.
Gurgle Quest?
Where you plays like a worm.
Oh!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We love Gurgle Quest.
Gurgle Quest.
Thieves probably game, that right? one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
I didn't get very far.
Yeah, it's pretty hard, but it's cool. I think Breloofs are still probably some of my favorite entries. Just wild creativity there.
Oh, my God.
Just
the, so the joke fun. Of, the joke in Hawk's Judgment is so good.
But yeah,
didn't one of these get tweeted about by like a notable game dev like Terry Kavanaugh?
That was the Vessel by Katie Bigenzo. Mm-hmm. I really like that one. It's a very cool puzzle.
The Star Trek it's one tricky. Really took off too.
Yes, that was
that's
was
crazy that some of these are actually doing numbers.
Yeah.
I still need to play Data's Adventures. I'm really excited.
Oh, Data's Adventures is real cool. It's real fun.
Yes,
I liked Excellent. It. But yeah, so to everybody that gave Tessa's RPG Nightmare a go, thank you so much. Like, it's just seeing people like get joy from that and understanding like what I was going for, and especially people just going crazy over that climax, which I had so much fun with. I threw Ellis in as a nod to Facets.
We love him.
Okay.
I enjoyed that joke.
I recognize that sprite there.
Yeah. He's Ellis.
Everybody used him as the villain. It's great. Just constantly made me so happy. There's so many people that specifically used him in the same spot that I did with the same monster sprite.
Yep.
Made me really happy. I made one more game after the last podcast.
Oh, man. This one is so good.
So the first one was Demon's Keep, and it was a 1 hour like RPG-ass RPG. And then the second one was called Jam Game, and it's a 5-minute back and forth with two game devs arguing with each other about how hard their game should be.
Yeah, it's real good. I love that. I love this one to pieces. Like, there's like, I think you did a lot of good work on like the scene choreography and like making a lot of use of character movements and like the jumping effects and stuff. Like, it's just, yeah, I like this one a lot. And as somebody who
came together,
and as somebody like who struggles with that in my own games of just like, you know, like how hard it should be. It's like, well, what are you making this for then? You know, it's like, as somebody, you know, like that message hit really like hard for me. Yeah. And I really appreciated it. I appreciated it.
That's real nice. I feel like I'm perpetually in a middle ground because I've got like, a lot of game dev friends kind of working in a specific, in a very approachable mode. Mm-hmm. I think that's generally where I'm operating. And then I've got a lot of like out there, kind of classic game dev friends who are making things that are completely wild. Like we talked about The Vessel.
Yep.
We talked about, I didn't talk about Sky and Flare. That's one of my favorites. And then just in general, that's been like the waters I've been swimming in for years are things that can be a lot more demanding. Mm-hmm. Than like what is the like, you know, Game Maker's Toolkit approved design.
Yeah. A lot of these games probably not passing the Game Maker's Toolkit checklists, I don't imagine.
we play tested 400 games and these are all the mistakes that people make. So like I'm kind of always stewing on those I really enjoy. That's like the one of the only like overtly meta games I've made, and I really enjoyed how that conversation came together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really good. Like that one a lot.
Mm.
So yeah,
games are good.
Games are good. Making games is good. Play a Tessa's RPG Nightmare. I'm really proud of it. I'm like, again, it went from a game jam to me to just being like, no, I'm really, really happy with this as a thing that I will proudly display at the top of my itch page for a very long time.
You're glowing. This makes me happy.
I am. Like, I again, like, when I did that first playthrough of it and everything just felt perfect. I was just like, I can't believe I did this in a week. I don't know how this happened, but it did. And, you know, again, got one of my favorite creations out of it. So
we should do something. We've gotten a lot of people that have played. We've gotten several people that have played every game now. I should do either something on my blog or maybe something on the podcast or just covering all these, because this is what a cool loadout of stuff.
Yeah, like this was a wild experience. And it's ignited the creative flame of so many people that, you know, who are may have felt a little stuck creatively, or people that are just doing it for the first time. And it's just like, oh, shit, wait, no, I can do this.
Awesome.
That's awesome. That's shit the world needs right now.
Yep. No, I think giving people like scope is so hard, and scope is so hard in RPG Maker, especially because you have so many tools.
Yeah.
So just giving people the maps, I'm really pleased with how that came together for everyone, because it seemed to have exactly the right effect. People made stuff that was workable within the span of the jam. I'm surprised at how many folks made multiple games. That also made me really happy.
Yeah, that's man, what a good thing to have happened.
Thank you to Effie for bullying me.
Yeah, this is one of those times.
We need to run a game jam. Well, I have this one idea. Do it.
You should.
I don't know. I'm really tired. Do it.
So the solution is all those anti-bullying ads were just bullshit, because it just works.
It just works on John Thayer.
Yeah.
Don't bully people, but it works on me.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. John's got a fetish.
I didn't say that.
I know I did. I'm just making the observation.
I did not say it. I'm just saying that I didn't say it.
Okay. Okay. I also read a visual novel.
Yeah.
Love me some visual novels, people. I
love visual novels here.
I read The Demon Queen's Dire Dilemma. So this is another...
I read the first chapter of this one. It's a delight.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, when I saw you pick it up, I was like, oh, I cannot wait to see your thoughts on this, because it's just, it's dialed into such a tone that it's just like, I think this is going to hit just right. I think this is, after everything else I know you've been through. So this is a new banger. I think it's the latest one from Ebi Hime. And if you don't know...
It was like two weeks ago, but then she released another VN.
Of course she did. Of fucking course she did. But if you don't know who she is, I think I could only call her probably the most prolific OELVN author currently in the game. I don't know anybody who's more prolific than her right now in this space in terms of creating very big visual novels and having a ton of them and just releasing them at such regular intervals.
It's nuts. It's crazy.
So I typed Ebi Hime into my browser, and a certain other game popped up first.
Yeah? I bet I know what it was.
Maybe coming up on this podcast soon. I didn't realize that these were the same author.
Yeah! Yeah! Same author! So this girl's got range.
Oh. Yeah. Because this thing looks super cute, the one you're talking about.
Oh, it's... my God. It's so sickening. So this one is about a demon queen named Asmodeus. She invades and takes over a kingdom, and she does so in a manner that leads to no casualties at all. And she graciously lets the current king and his retainers and the like leave the castle peacefully, with one exception. She decides to keep his daughter, Princess Lisette, as a sort of trophy of her victory. She's so devious. She's so evil.
Twisted demon king, demon queen.
She's so twisted and evil. So her evil plan is to like take this princess and make her into her personal servant in order to just like to break her will and make her an example to the kingdom that like no one should ever cross the almighty demon queen. And as you can probably imagine, it goes exactly as planned.
Yes, absolutely.
Except it doesn't. So the Princess Lisette is actually like just totally fine with the idea. Like she doesn't mind being a maid and serving Asmodeus and even expresses just all the time that she's actually much happier with this arrangement than she had been being a princess and being shuffled around all these fancy balls, all to be married off to some sleazy prince for the sake of political power. So, like, this is just like, she's just like, no, like, I'm totally fine with this. Like, this is pretty fun. And she's just like a big bundle of joy and so happy to be doing it. And it's, and this just drives Asmodeus crazy. Like, the fact that she can't completely subjugate and rule over this girl in a way that humiliates and degrades her and drives her insane, man. She's just like, she wants to be feared, but the person she's trying to subjugate is just, ah, no, hey, man, thanks. This is pretty rad. I'm digging this arrangement. So Asmodeus goes to her advisors for some help. These are another great couple of characters. We've got Nimue, who is, she's basically Patchouli.
Yep.
She's a sleepy demon prince. She's a sleepy demon priestess that does a lot of like weird and very, you know, disturbing experiments. Unethical would be the word. And then you've got Severia. It's the leader of Asmodeus's army, and she feels very inspired by the designs of like the Chester characters in Umineko. Maybe like a little bit of Gop in there too.
Oh yeah, that was my point of comparison.
And their advice to Asmodeus is that, like, well, if you can't get this girl to buckle under your heel through fear, why don't you just seduce her? Make her fall completely in love with you and then just pull the rug from under her and break her heart. You'll just totally smash her to bits then. And that's kind of the plan. That's how the basic premise gets up. So Asmodeus is going to spend a lot of time thinking of ways to seduce Lisette. And there's only one tiny problem. She's kind of a gigantic girl failure. She has absolutely no experience in this kind of thing, and so she spends a lot of time kind of just tripping all over herself trying to seduce a girl that is totally happy with where she's at and is probably, you know, already knows a thing or two about a thing or two. This story is just endlessly charming. I love the character interactions. I love all the characters. Like, everybody is just, there's not one better than the other. It's just, anytime any of these characters are on screen and interacting, they're just delightful. It's syrupy sweet without being what I would call too much, because I think that I don't always like a lot of Ebby's work, because I do think a lot of it does come off a little too saccharine for me. And that's just my taste. There's nothing wrong with writing that kind of fiction if that's what you're into. It's just the stuff that hits more for me with her work is the stuff where it's just like there's like a little bit more going on to it. And I think that, like, dealing with the consummate girl failure that Asmodeus is and being in her mindset and her just going absolutely insane because she cannot break this girl. And her misadventures into trying to seduce her and how those end up playing out. John got through one of the more fun scenes that I really love, where, you know, the first seduction attempt, I guess we would call it. And it's just so stupid and sickeningly sweet and funny and cute. You're just like, you can't help but just absolutely melt at how amazing that scene comes off. It's just really funny. I think that it's paced perfectly. The art is gorgeous. I love all the character designs. And it's
kind of like kind of good energy to the VN direction too, where it's just like it's one of those that just kind of pops.
Yeah, they've got a lot of really cool effects happening, like, you know, like that anime shock background thing where a character, like, they're thinking to themselves and then lightning strikes in the background and like they're they lose all their, you know, like they lose the color of their eyes. It's just, you know, it's just very well put together, and it ends up having a very, very touching core to it as you get deeper and deeper into the story and find out where all of this is coming from. It's just really, really nice when it hits the end. It's a game that's like magical. When I finished it, I was like, yeah, I like that. And then like as the week's gone on and I've seen other people talking about it, I was like, no, man, this was actually really great. I love this, actually. This is so, so good.
Maybe Hime. God damn.
Just a, what a range. What a range.
I've gone so long without playing any OELVNs or like anything that is in this mode where it's like all, you know, 2 to 4 hour long, 2 to 4 hours long. Like a little bit like that kind of beefier experience.
Yeah.
With cute art. Mm-hmm. It's a cool world to be in.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah. Love me some OELVNs. So yeah, the Demon Queen's Dire Dilemma, like this is absolutely a treat. Like if you liked anything about my description here just now, it's just like, just trust me on this one. Just learn to trust my visual novel recommendations. Just kind of overall,
why don't you just trust Polly's visual novel recommendation?
Wait, why that qualifier? Just trust Polly's recommendations.
I mean, yeah, that's probably true. I mean, I was
never wrong.
I do know of at least one Twitch channel where if you exclamation point Polly, it just says Polly is always right. So
there you go.
Just saying.
But Polly's like particularly always right about VNs.
I am particularly always right about VNs and narrative driven games, I think. I think that I've got a pretty good curated list, and I think that my taste speaks for itself. If you go over the history of this show, I think I've recommended a lot of bangers over the last 8 or 9 years, so 13 years. God. It's been 13 years. Long.
The least controversial of all, the Zero Time Dilemma Gotti pick.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No friction there.
Like a top 10 podcast and like we were getting like hundreds of angry emails like, you're wrong. That game sucks. We work for IGN and just, oh my god, everyone was so mad the year we picked Zero Escaped.
Yeah,
you put Neptunia over Undertale.
What? Neptunia over Undertale, baby.
I can't believe John didn't actually list Shovel Knight Plague of Shadows. You're gonna die.
Well, wait, that one's real.
Okay, that, yeah, you can.
That one still comes up
on that one.
Yeah, that is a moment that lives in Soxcast infamy, I think. That is just always going to be referenced. That is that is interwoven into the show's fabric.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to crack the Zero Time Dilemma joke, but I was like, you know what? It could be a little spicy.
Nah, go ahead. It's a very non-controversial opinion to think that Zero Time Dilemma is maybe not that great.
I thought you were going to say that completely uncontroversial, that it's absolutely peak.
I mean, that's in my world. Absolutely. I think it's peak. I love it. I love big and stupid. Pick. I love big and stupid. And I think that Zero Time Dilemma is big and stupid in all the ways that appeal to me. And I totally understand if it doesn't anybody else.
I think that's completely reasonable.
I just thought about like Poly VN recommendations. It was like, hey, John, play I the Somnium Files already. Christ.
I was like, I love Polly's 2 to 4 hour VN recommendations.
There you go. We're going to pare that down a little bit.
Let's always listen to Polly's 2 to 4 hour recommendations.
1,000 times resist sitting over here in the corner. Like, man, I'm good. I tell you, you don't know what you're missing.
I'll get to it. We'll expand it out to the 10 hour ones.
Yeah.
We'll get there. But this, I've been very comfy with the 2 to 4 hour ones, and you've got a lot of those in the tank.
Yeah. I've kind of like thrown a lot of those out there over the years. So
I've just been like kind of in the not keeping up at all with the whole scene, like watching you and Maple and whatnot linking games in the chat. Like, oh damn, people keep making cool stuff.
So many games.
Uh huh.
Like 13 Sentinels. You never played
that. Man, 13 Sentinels.
Why do you keep listing 30 to 40 hour games?
They're the best.
Because they are kind of good.
They can look, they can be fine, but it's like, I wonder why John hasn't played this yet. Because I only have space in my life for like 6 to 8 of those per year. That's not that many slots.
I think 13 Sentinels is worth a slot.
I know, I believe it. There's a lot of games that are worth a slot.
For what it's worth, I'm not like pushing Cold Steel on you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That would be, that's a lot of slots. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a year of slots.
That's a year of slots.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, you know what else is worth a slot?
What's worth a slot?
Well, wait. Are we transitioning?
Yes! Go, go, go! You don't have to ask me. That's how you ruin the trans. That's how you ruin the Segui.
Fucking Invictus.
Invictus!
Oh, jeez.
We're in there. Final boss of Kaizo has arrived.
Yeah, definitely the hardest one ever made.
Yep. Nothing's ever been rated higher on the difficulty scale.
Nothing has ever been rated higher. So that's my, that's been my Kaizo journey since, I forget, like late 2023, maybe. Is like, I started with jumps and platforms and then just slowly escalated and slowly escalated. I played Love Yourself and Two Kaizo to Learn. I think Polly shouted those out in the last Gotti cast.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Love Yourself is amazing.
It's so fucking good. Took the next step up from that. I did Quickie World. The Quickie Worlds took the next step up from that. Did like Gamble and Memory Lane. And then another step up from that last year, and I did Ambivalence in Akogare Mario World. Mm-hmm. Akogare was the original Invictus trainer. And then the game that started it all, because I watched the GDQ run of it and it looked amazing, was Invictus. Mm-hmm. And it's 22 exits. It's beefy. It was formerly rated Kaizo Intermediate, but they changed up how their ratings works, and now it's Kaizo Expert.
So now
the first one I played.
What's, is it Grandmaster after Expert now?
There's Expert, Master, and then Grandmaster.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. So the Grandmaster ones look stupid.
Yeah.
Master ones, there's still ones that look pretty fun. Some of the, couple of the Matty Thorson hacks are, like Supersonic Saves the World, are Master rated.
Yeah.
And I really like those. I watch those on stream and mm-hmm. they seem so fun. But yeah, about halfway through Invictus. So like,
that's a lot of progress. And when did you start it? Like a week ago?
A couple weeks. Okay. I think I started like right when the jam ended. I was like, all right, I need this. But it's been like 12, 15 hours, and 10, 11 exits down. I've got one that I'm almost done with in the other room.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, no individual checkpoint has taken more than 2 hours, which is my benchmark for whether the platformer is actually hard.
Okay.
So far, like a lot of 45-minute ones, a lot of them a little bit over an hour, a lot of them close to an hour, but none of them over 2 hours. And really, like almost all of them are around an hour or less, except for one, the third level first checkpoint took me an hour 40.
Mm.
I like these stats. It helps me. Helps keep it clean in my head.
Yeah. Gives you another reason to make a spreadsheet.
So, yeah, and it's another reason to make a spreadsheet. So I told Rad up front that this was like this I was going into this expecting a 30 to 50 hour journey.
Yeah.
But I was really scared. I know it's going to get harder. So what I was scared of was that I'd do the first level or the first three levels and they'd all take me like 3 hours a checkpoint or something absurd. Mm. And I'd just be like, oh no, all my preparing has been for nothing. This is too hard. This is so much. And it's just not that. It's actually just slightly harder than the stuff I'm already used to so far. And I know it's going to get harder, but I know that I can, if every level was going to be like a gauntlet, it was going to be too much. But the fact that it's been comfy so far, I can handle five brutal gauntlets at the end. Or
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Cause this game's like, it's not just, I'm jacking off like, oh, it's hard for the, it's hard. And that's so cool. It's just a delightful platformer. Like they use kind of like a jumps and platforms poly, like every level mm-hmm. after like the first one has one cute ASM gimmick.
Oh, cool.
Like one cute custom gimmick. And Like doing weird stuff with layer one and two, having yes. water floating in the air.
Always fun.
There's a ghost that the one I'm on now is a ghost that's moving up and down to the bottom of the screen, and it matches your horizontal position. Mm-hmm. So you spin jump onto it, and then you try to match its horizontal position as you're jumping up and down on it to get past obstacles.
Oh, that's fucked.
I know there's one later on where I think where you control the layer background with the L and R buttons.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen that actually. I know what level you're talking about.
Uh-huh. And then I know that the final boss is a brutal gauntlet.
Oh,
so I'm
yeah.
excited for that
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So I'm having a ball. This is a climax to the journey. I have other stuff I'd be interested in, but this is what I was building towards, and it feels really good. I feel like after ramping up slowly over the last couple of years, this game is just a comfy, fun, normal Mario game.
Yeah, and like
this is just normal Mario now.
That's a good feeling because it's something that you worked toward. It still seemed incredibly monolithic before you went in, even with all of this mm-hmm. preparation. And then you get there and it's just like, oh, I'm not doing all right. It's like when you overprepare for major boss fight in an RPG mm-hmm. or something, and then you get mm-hmm. there and you totally just kind of cakewalk. And it's like, oh, no, I got this figured out.
Yeah, like that's the point of these journeys to me, is just to add more kinds of games that I can just like play and have them be fun, just fun, nice times.
It's like it's a game that you're playing and not like something that you're trying to dive into and understand more. It's more like, no, this is just part of the normal gaming diet now.
Yeah, exactly. Like playing arcade shmup.
There you
now.
Go.
Like, oh, yeah, I'm used to this.
Yeah.
This is fun.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really nice time. I played an Ebihime VN.
What? Ebihime.
So this one popped in at your game of the year last year, I think at number 8.
Yep.
I played Sweetest Monster and Sweetest Monster Refrain.
Oh, let's dig in. Because I did not talk about this game at length on the Game of the Year cast. I kind of made some vague allusions to it. It explained a bit of why I really, really like it. But now's mm-hmm. the time for John to go ahead and full autopsy this bitch. Let's go.
Oh my God. This game took over my brain, Polly.
It does. It does. When I finished the first game, it left me feeling away. And then and then I had a lot to think about. And it was just like, I came to a realization. It's like, you kind of just have to let a story be a story. It's sticking in my craw. I have to know. So then I played Refrain, and then this game stayed in my brain for like a week.
Yeah, I'm just... It's the first time in a while where I finished like a prose work and was like, I'm not ready to say goodbye to these characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though they're not particularly good or likable.
No,
But I wasn't... I just had gotten so connected with them over the course of both games that I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this world is just over. I can't believe this is over.
Yeah. Like you spend such the time you spend with everybody is like, it's pretty intimate. Like it's very and it's easy to kind of just feel connected to all of these awful people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a VN about a shitty dad.
Whew. Boy, he's...
You have a lot of VNs about kids. You don't get a lot of VNs about people in their 40s.
Yeah, like, this is a game that's, like, about a dude that's getting ready to hit middle age, and he's pretty fucking bummed about his lot in life right now. It's just like, things did not turn out the way I'd hoped.
He's bickering with his wife. He's not... His daughter's depressed and doesn't even talk to him. And he's just like just feeling so fucking sorry for himself.
Yep.
And he just like walks out. He's just taking a walk late. Like, I need to get some air. I can't deal with this. His house is suffocating.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out walking by like in his neighborhood. Gets on a bridge. It starts to rain. He's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that tracks.
Is he playing Green Day? Walking the boulevard of broken dreams.
He walks a lonely road.
The only one that I have ever known. We've all had our moments there of looping that one.
Yep.
But then he meets a beautiful girl on the bridge. who's much younger than him, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. immediately like starts flirting with him, and he's like, "What is going on? This is nice, but I don't know. I'm married." And then kind of flees after a little while, and then he runs into her again, and that's kind of the arc of the first game, is back and forth between his family, who he has this shitty relationship with, and then kind of like his and their attempts to sort of mend the gap and repair things. Like, it's not just one note, everybody sucks. It's more like, okay, you start off just kind of with the wife just being like a nag,
yeah.
and then you get more dimension to everybody and mm-hmm. kind of understand like, oh, this is a whole family.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real family. They're going through some tough times. It's not like this is going to, like, you start off in his headspace of this is going to be miserable forever. And then you get the sense of like, well, wait a minute. If everybody works at it, we could arrive at something better than this status quo. And then on the side of that is his continuing encounters with this girl, Belle, who's introduced as like a supernatural character. She's like a human incarnation of a cat he rescued as a child.
Yeah.
It's a deliberate send up of like Nekopara.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's very, very out and out the whole time. Like, look, I'm a demon and you're going to be mine.
She's extremely assertive. That's like the difference, I think, with Nekopara.
Yeah.
Like, she's kind of taking the reins on the interaction.
Yeah. It's reversing like, trying to woo him. It's reversing what typically goes on. It's turning that on its head of what typically goes on in this type of VN.
Mm-hmm. So that's the arc, is like he's having an emotional affair off to the side while trying to repair his relationship with his family. And then both of those stories kind of spiral and evolve and evolve and evolve. And then it hits a really brutal culmination. And it ends.
The culmination is just abruptly. It is one of the most immaculate rug pull mic drops I've experienced in a story, because it's just like, if you think about it afterwards, they've kind of been planting little seeds there.
Oh, for sure.
But in the moment, if you're just kind of not keyed into it totally, it's like, oh my God, you just dropped the biggest bombshell in visual novel history at the at the most wild time and scene to do that.
Anyway, this one's 18 plus, by the way.
This is 18 plus.
Oh boy.
So,
can I say something? I noticed on ebihime.itch.io.
Sure.
Like they have a ton of different visual novels, and because they're such a widespread, you know, the descriptions all mention like, oh, is this Yuri? Is this BL? Is it, you know, grim, or is it not safe for work? The one for Sweetest Monster just says a visual novel about a cute cat girl.
It says cute and then open parentheses, question mark,
question mark.
It doesn't say not safe for work. Doesn't say like life destroying despair. It's just cute question mark cat girl.
She is cute. I don't know if it's here. Let me see if it's actually marked. It's marked adults only on Itch. So if you go into it, it pops up with the, you must be 18 plus to view this content.
I was just hoping somebody doesn't get completely fucking blindsided.
Nah. And I think that's true of a lot of hers, or like some of them usually she specifies all, this one's all ages.
Yeah.
As opposed to specifying this one's 18 plus.
Yeah.
So that's the arc there. I think this one is like fun and funny and horny and trashy on purpose.
I love the horny that this is too, because it's so like, good. It's such a, like, you feel like, I don't know if it's a feeling, because I felt like I was doing something wrong. Like when I was like when I was in his head and he was having these little moments with Belle where like, you're not doing anything. I'm just talking to her and kind of like, I like the idea that this cute young girl is flirting with me. It's, but you're also just like, oh man, I do feel a little skeevy though. And then the big moment happens and it's just like, man, need a shower. Gonna need a shower.
So this one, and yeah, this one's also like, I would say triggering. I would say like,
yeah,
it's one of those where like trying to talk about it at length, it just knocks.
It'll knock the wind out of the climax.
Out of it.
Like, yeah. It's just like, I just think you kind of have to go in expecting the unexpected, expecting that you may get thrown for quite the loop at the end. And just like, if that's not your jam, then well, at least it happened at the end.
Yeah. I mean, it's my arc with it was like coming to the end and being like, oh, cool. This is a game like kind of trying to operate on Song of Saya's level in a way I haven't really seen.
Yeah.
In an OELVN, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not
directly comparable, but
no.
Like, it's pretty comparable, actually. There's a lot of threads you can draw there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's also like resolutely its own thing.
Yeah.
If that is a level that you're fine operating at, I don't think there's anything to worry
yeah.
about.
Yeah. Like, I think if you've read Song of Saya and like you stomached all that, I don't think that like the mic drop / bomb drop in this one is going to kind of like be way too out of bounds, I guess. It's just like, yeah. It's like, it's a story. It's telling a story and it's doing it for a reason. And it's trying to elicit a reaction, I guess, is the only way that I can put it.
I mean, it was almost too much for you.
It was almost. It was definitely something.
You had to really chew on it.
I had to really chew on it and I had to sit on it. And it's just like, but there was just like this, the way that it was written, the way that it was exploring this, the way that it was building things up. It's like, there is something worthwhile here. There's something very interesting and cool going on that I need to know.
Yep. That makes sense to me. And then they explore that at length in the sequel.
Yes, Sweetest Monster Refrain.
Which is no longer on Steam or Itch or Fatku because it was deemed too extreme.
Which is weird, despite the fact that this has no real NSFW content in it.
not in terms of images. And then even any of the sexual content is like not...
It's very light.
Like lurid.
Yeah, it's not lurid.
Luridly described. It's about the story. It's about the characters. I don't have any issue... like. Payment processor shouldn't be able to ban porn.
Yes, that 255%.
That's evil. But this isn't even porn.
No, this is not porn at all.
You can make the argument for the first game. The second one is not.
Yeah,
just like absolutely.
Sweetest Monster is on Switch.
That's so weird.
So Refrain just like starts you at the end point of the previous game, and then is like, all right. We're gonna explore all the ramifications of this. It's like 1.5 times longer than the first game. And it's grinding because he's so unhappy. The main boy is so miserable. It's like it starts with him staring himself down in the mirror in a CG and just contemplating how he could kill himself in that bathroom.
Refrain is definitely a different tone, man. Like, my only close analog here was that Steins Gate Zero is Okabe, you know, if the bad ending had been the canon ending for Steins Gate. And it is utter misery being in that man's head and how much he had failed and how helpless he feels and how desperate he is. And like, I think that this Sweetest Monster Refrain clears that by a mile.
God, that's wild. I think it could hit some folks as like too much. Like, I saw a very angry review on IMDb, but even without not even looking at that one, just like, I think it could feel a little bit like it's banging the one note over
sure.
and over.
Sure. Yeah. Like, I think that would be a legitimate criticism.
Yeah. I was getting there a little bit, but I think it really comes around in a good way.
Yeah.
So like the first game is like the fun, trashy fan service game that's like deliberately parodying and playing up the underlying ugliness of something like in something like Nekopara. The power, like playing into the power dynamics and like examining that. It's not like, oh, your VN is evil. It's just like
it's putting a shoe on the other foot.
Yeah, because it's fun to do that because it makes for a cool story.
Yeah.
So besides that, and then Refrain just like exhausted, like puts you in the actual like headspace of what that would be like, and then plays it out until it reaches the grim and inevitable conclusion.
Oh. and the way that I compared it earlier to Her Lullaby and Afterward, kind of shamelessly, mm-hmm. I suppose.
I think that was in our DMs.
Yeah, where the first game is obviously like psychological horror thing and cute girls, you know, they kiss in the end. Yay! And then Afterward explores the reality of just like, well, this is a big thing that just happened to us, and how do we handle that? And how do each of these characters kind of process that and deal with that together or not? And I think that it got some similar reactions that I've seen Sweetest Monster Refrain get, in that like, I wish this was just the first one, or good Lord. But this is just exploring a totally different set of emotions, and it's just like, this dude did a thing, and now he's trying to live or unlive with the ramifications of all of that.
I'm gonna unalive myself.
Yeah, there you go. Gotta keep it safe for YouTube. You can't say suicide, kill yourself, suicide, kill yourself, suicide, kill yourself, suicide, kill yourself. You can't say that on YouTube.
It's actually going to get pulled now.
We'll see. We'll see. I'm not editing it.
Honestly, God, the way John describes the opening of this, I'm like, I bet this game got banned because like somebody played the first 5 minutes of both of them. It was like, oh, this one's dealing with suicide. We got to ban it from itch.
Nah. I know exactly. I think it's because it's upfront with certain content.
It's up.
That's. It grinds my gears when like you try to be honest and say what the game has with the content warning and then get punished for it.
Yep.
God. I fucking love visual novels. Mm. I fucking love stories. I finished this one like, oh my God, I love the power of stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this story, like I said, like it stayed in my head for about a week afterward. I was like, I can't believe she pulled this off. And it's just masterful. It's non-exploitative. It's just it's like telling this horrible story and just like, all right, this is the corner you wrote yourself into. What are you going to do with it? And it's tackled in like the most, like, I feel realistic way she could have handled it. And it's not pretty. It's not for the faint of heart. But I will 100% stand behind this as a recommendation.
Mm-hmm. I need to play her Yandere, your AVN.
It gets so lonely here, I believe. Yandere.
Yep.
I've got that one as well.
There's more than one. There's her love like poison.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a couple I need to get caught up on. I need to, it gets so lonely here. I have that one downloaded. So.
You can pick and choose. This is when you got a really good backlog of material is when you're looking at it and you're like, well, I'm not going to play. Going to be able to play all of these.
No.
So I can just kind of pick and choose what looks fun for me and pick and choose because she's putting out so much stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
That's aspirational. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Cool.
I bet if you go to itch and type in Yandere Yuri, you get like 4,000 results.
I don't doubt it.
I mean, after the Toxic Yuri Jam, especially.
Oh, geez.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That flooded the marketplace real good.
I need to play that Yandere Yuri visual novel. Bro, you need to be more specific.
Look, it's good when girls are mean to other girls.
Yeah, big fan.
Yeah. It's good when girls are mean to boys.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. You know, there isn't really a combination there I'm not happy with.
There's a great movie I saw once called Mean Girls.
Uh-huh.
Ah, well, there you go.
Yeah, see?
All right. That was my arc. I had a good time.
Glad you enjoyed that one. When I saw you were playing, and I just like, I got real giddy because it's a game that I've had in my head for like the last year now.
Oh my God.
And it's just like,
I was dying. I was like,
nobody to talk to about.
Anyone to talk to about this.
Yeah.
You must have spoiled the game in DMs to us because somehow, because I don't think you did it on Game of the Year.
No, I did spoil it in DMs.
Yeah, because I'm like, how did I remember the twist in the first game, but then John didn't?
I knew the gist of it for him. I knew like the gist of it, but I didn't. But the specifics of how it came,
how you get there, blindsided me.
Yeah,
like how you get there and what's actually going on with this main character, and like the way you kind of have to dissect him to understand, like, what, dude, you are pathetic.
Such a fucking loser.
Oh, he's such a big dork ass loser. It's like, oh my god, shit or get off the pot, my guy.
I think it's a really good examination about how like a man can really like, just taking it kind of non-literally, because it doesn't map to anything that makes sense in real life. Yeah. There's no like clean metaphor here.
Magic succubus cat girls.
when it comes with like getting wooed by a demonic cat girl, like there's no clean metaphor. But I think it dives into like, here's how a thoughtless, passive, like middle-aged guy can really hurt his family without meaning to, even without even like just kind of going with the flow around him until he's like kept going with the flow into the abyss.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. Cause it,
what you, get, abyss you have a lot of is.
Stories. You have a lot of stories about like overt, like shitheads or like just very straightforward abusers. I think being in this guy's head for so long, it hit me good. Cool.
Cool.
Any other thoughts, Polly, before we throw it to Rhett?
No, I think go read Sweetest Monster.
Yeah.
Like, try it out.
Then go acquire Sweetest Monster.
And then go acquire Sweetest Monster Refrain. I wholeheartedly recommend this. Like, if you like something like Sayano Uta and don't mind a story that's not afraid to be a little disturbing, go for it.
Yep. And it's all of our stuff is Pay What You Want on Itch. So if you, it's all on Steam too, but it's Pay What You Want on Itch. So if you wanted to, if you felt guilty about acquiring the sequel, you can throw extra bucks to make up for it.
Yep.
Rhett.
Oh, what boy, have you been where up do to? I, where do I, what have I been up to?
What have you done?
What have I done? So last year I was like, okay, if I stop watching Hall Live, that's going to be a lot of free time freed up.
Yeah.
I'm going to be able to blast through some media finally. And then that didn't really happen for January and February because, hey, a new Trails came out. and it was a beefy one. I think, so it wasn't even just me. Like, if he finished it end of February, and then me, Tom, and Maple finished it, like, early March.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, none of us finished it, like, within a month, for sure. Like, this is probably the longest one in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But so I finished it like a week after the podcast. I was right before go mode starts, basically. I was going to save this for last, but maybe I'll just go with Trails first. God, the ending of that game, man.
It fucked everybody up. I saw people finishing this game and there was not a single normal reaction to it. It was like, no, this game has fucked me up for life.
It's so crazy, the level of escalation in Trails cliffhangers. Because it's not every game. I don't want to say specifically which ones, because John hasn't played them. Maybe he'll get to Cold Steel in a decade. But from where first chapter, like, rips your heart out at the end, to where some of the two middle ones have big cliffhangers, the escalation is, like, a very personal story. It's just, like, involving these three characters you've been with the whole game, basically, to this affects the entire nation in the Cold Steel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're at cliffhangers that affect the entire world.
Yeah!
Like, oh, there's not a single character in Zemuria that isn't going, what the F, it's what just happened.
Oh, God. We're all boned!
We're all in this together now. So, yeah. Last podcast, I was at the back half of chapter 3, right before the finale, and, like, this has the root stuff, so you got the Reen root, the Kevin root, and the Van root, and, like, all three of them pop off pretty much simultaneously. It's like, oh boy, oh, we're in this. Oh, we're getting big revelations here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into the final chapter, and you know how those go in Trails games, but God, from the last save point to the end of the game, it felt like Trails truly hitting a new level of like, we're not just in go mode anymore. We are in nitro. We're hitting the nitro.
We passed lap one, and we're pressing the turbo button.
If he said something to me like that she had watched the last 2 hours of this game on YouTube 3 times after playing it, and I can understand why. I, like most Trails games, I usually end up taking about 1,000 screenshots, and mm-hmm. I was way behind pace in this one. And then I took about 260 during the last couple hours.
Yeah!
Just, I don't know what the fuck happened. Just, the ending of this game is just impossible to put into words without spoiling the shit out of it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we got two of those in a row.
Yep.
What do you mean the other one?
Well, Sweetest Monster. We can't tell you what.
Oh.
We can't tell you.
Talking around it.
I thought you were talking about like other people's reactions to this, like Maple just being like, Kondo, I'm going to fucking kill you.
I'm going to kill you.
Trails ruined my life or whatever. like you said, everyone had big reactions to this one. And it's just like, oh, God. Like, and then the fact of them dropping by far the biggest cliffhanger the series has seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not following it up for over 2 years now.
Oh, it's so good.
Instead being like, anyways, we're going to remake the first game now, and then after that, we're going to remake the second game.
And then we're going to make Kyoto Xanadu.
And then we're going to make a new Dragon Slayer.
Was the 50th anniversary announcement just that they're finishing Trails in 2030?
In 2031, in 2030, they're going to announce the final game of the series for 2031, but they already have the ending of the next game written.
Okay.
Yeah, they did specifically mention Horizon 2 scenario is written.
Yeah.
Or like decided on. So like they have mentioned a direct sequel to this one, finally. But like for how this series has gone, usually kind of mostly annual or maybe biannual releases, it's still been a bit. They left everybody hanging.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it on this cliffhanger.
That's masterful.
It's evil. Iffy in despair because she always just watches the trailer for the next game. And then there is no
there
next
is
game.
There is no
yet.
Next game yet. We are totally caught up.
That's the thing. Is like for like what 20 years the US has been behind Japan in terms of releases.
Yeah.
For this to be the one we catch up on.
That's such a cruel twist.
Oh, it's masterful.
Exquisite. God,
the ending is so nuts. Like, I want to say one thing. Polly, do you remember the end of Cold Steel 1?
Yeah.
Where they introduce a new combat system for one fight at the end?
Mm-hmm.
What if they do that again, but twice?
Oh, okay.
There's two, like, single-use combat systems in this game. I'm just like, why? What are you doing?
That's a hell of a thing to pull out of your hat at the end.
They aren't like 100%, like you can kind of see where, but they're very, there's two very unique fights basically. And I'm just like, man, everyone thought there was going to be like 10 more hours of this game when it ends.
Oh,
it's like everyone thought it was going to keep going. And then it just rug pulls you unbelievably hard.
You get Cold Steel 3'd.
Yeah, that's definitely the closest comparison, even though I kind of felt like that one had a, hey, this is the final dungeon for real moment, and it was.
Yeah.
I truly, truly did not think I was in the final dungeon in this one. So they reversed Cold Steel 2'd me.
Oh, that's so good.
There's, you know, in Xenoblade 3, there's that part called the movie.
Oh, God, like, yeah, man. Oh, God.
It's just like a 90-minute cutscene with one save in the middle.
Fuck, yeah, it's real
good. That's kind of what this is, where it's just like, hey, we're just going to blow your mind for like 2 hours. And then a save pops up and says, the final boss is the next fight. And then you just go, wait, what?
Why are you doing this to me?
The final boss just, he jumps you.
That's so good.
And then the game ends.
Oh, man.
I'm just like, what? And then
the reaction to this game has done so much to reignite my desire to finally, like, to get right back in, because I needed a couple of years away from it after Reverie. But it's just like the way that this game has excited literally every person that's played it. And it's just like I have to get there. You know, I don't care if I have to play Daybreak 1 and 2 on easy and just, you know, breeze through it and enjoy the story. I don't care at this point.
Yeah.
I'm here because this story and this world have been such a big part of my life at this point. I need to know, like, why everyone is freaking the fuck out.
Yeah. It's such, I can't recommend just, you know, 100-hour games. Just
sure.
Because they're so long, but it's like, I do understand why this would make you want to jump back in, but it's like, it is a climb to get there. I do think probably at this point playing on easy would be for the best.
Yeah.
The combat system in this one really is kind of busted.
Oh, yeah.
Because they bring back, like, the Brave Order equivalents the later Cold Steel games, but I think, I'm not sure about Maple, but everyone else, like Tom and Iffy, were playing on Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was as well. And, like, it just gets fucking busted at the end because you have to use those.
Oh.
Because, like, second to the final boss just opens with, like, a volley of, like, 13,000 damage attacks when that's about as much HP as my team has.
Oh, fantastic.
But, hey, there's one of the Brave Orders that's take 90% less damage.
Oh, okay.
So it's just, like, you just turn that on and then just kind of breeze through it. And
eat 1,300, yeah.
And it's just like, oh, well, now I'm not really taking damage, noticeable damage from anything. And it's just, it's kind of busted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the hardest part about the final boss was that, you know, multiple party stuff again. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to put the 90% damage reduction on the second phase. And then, oh, I'm only going to have 70% damage reduction for phase one, which actually made it kind of hard because you're still being hit so goddamn hard.
Yeah, like 70% of 13,000 is still a huge chunk of your HP. Yeah.
But it's just like, it felt like that one skill was so busted, like the damage reduction stuff. And, like, for most of the game, I was trying not to use it because it just felt broken. I'm like, oh, I'll use, you know, half turn order reduction, like, for speed.
Right.
And just go on the offensive the whole time, not really worry about enemies actually ever getting turns. Yeah, I think if you want to play these games on easy, that's fine. Oh, yeah. So the thing I was going to say, do you remember in Reverie when certain cutscenes started to look really good?
Mm-hmm.
They have really upped their game in terms of cutscenes.
I mean, I could tell that in the Trails 1 remake. Just like, oh, y'all are finally like stepping up your game here.
Oh, the game has been stepped up because Trails 1 remake came out after this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Reverie is when I started them noticing them do, like, the real elaborate, not sure if it's motion capture, but, like, you see a shift in the way characters are animated.
Yeah, like, there's a lot more motion that doesn't seem 100% canned.
Yeah. Imagine, like, hours of that at the end of this game.
Oh, Lord.
It's like, I saw a review from 2024, like, the Japanese release that said, like, you know, cutscene animation used to be one of Cold Steel's weakest strengths.
Yeah.
And now it's, like, one of the franchise's, like, defining traits of, like, how good the cutscenes are now. Like, their weakness turned into a strength.
Yes.
Basically what they said. And holy shit, like, for them to have something I would compare and put on the same level of, like, Xenoblade 3 stuff.
That's real cool.
That's pretty high praise.
Yeah.
That's real nice.
Yeah, I'm excited about the next one. I'm just, like, also a bit of despair where they leave you hanging in this one. I don't even know how you make a trailer for the next one
without dumping the shit out of it. Yeah, like, I am staying so far away from any kind of media for whatever Daybreak 2 might be. Like, it is Daybreak Horizon 2? Or Horizon 2.
They should have just called this one Daybreak 3.
Yeah.
They didn't because everybody disliked Daybreak 2.
Yeah, yeah. Daybreak 2 does not have a very good reputation among the fan base.
I think in Japan, like, that one's considered the worst Trails game, and this is considered the best. Which is a crazy turnaround.
Yep.
I do think, though, after playing this one, I'm like, well, I guess how a lot, I understand how a lot of that stuff was required, like the setup. There's so much setup, though. 200-hour RPGs of setup.
That's so much setup, Rhett.
And then this game also being like an 80-hour conspiracy plot setup. We're just like, you're just waiting. How does this all connect? How does this all connect? And then when you hit it, it's like, oh, no. Oh,
that's no. not what I was expecting.
Man, I even thought I knew where this was going back in, like, last year when I played Daybreak 2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, I had had a pretty good feeling about something for a while, and they still swerved you right at the last second.
Awesome.
Incredible.
I don't know how. It really kind of feels like they were like, hey, are we ever going to wrap this thing up? Let's get going here.
Let's turn up the volume a little bit.
Turn up the engine for two games. What are we doing here?
You all said that last game nothing happened. Well, what if everything happened in the next one?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, so Trails is good again.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Like I said, everybody's like, I'm getting secondhand excitement just from having seen literally everybody lose their mind over this game's climax.
It's really good. I need to probably rewatch it on YouTube at some point. Oh, did I finish my screenshot thing where I said, like, I took about 750 screenshots prior to the climax and then a quarter during the climax? Okay. Because it was just like, I can't comprehend what's happening right now, but I'll be able to look at these screenshots later. It's just so much. So I finished Trails, then I did a bunch of other stuff.
I played
a game.
What'd you play?
I played Demon Tides.
Oh.
This is a 3D platformer.
This is a follow-up to
Demon Turf.
Demon Turf. Which was really, really cool. I didn't finish it, but I played. I played about
TURF, right?
Yeah.
Oh no!
Wow. Yeah, I played about 30% of Demon Turf, and I liked what I played. It's just I wasn't really in the mood to kind of go more than I played, but it was good.
Yeah, it's got a good setup. It's got a great main character. I got right to the end, and there's some sort of gate on the final boss that I don't remember what it was, but it was like, hey, go 100% the entire rest of the game. And I'm just like, wait, what? No.
Nope.
So I never actually did the final boss. Also, the bosses in the first game are by far the weakest part.
Yeah, not great.
So yeah,
a platformer? That doesn't sound right.
Yeah. So Demon Tides, it's the much refined sequel. It's fully 3D now, like the main character is no longer a 2D sprite. She was super cute before.
Oh, yeah. I loved that 2D, the 2D look they gave the main character in the first game.
I do really like how she looks in the new one, though.
Mm.
And because of that, there's a whole ton of like outfit customization.
Yeah.
Because, hey, you don't have to draw new sprites every single time for every outfit. Yeah. So, like, you can change the colors and hairstyles and stuff. There's a badge to make yourself back into a 2D sprite. And unfortunately, it just looks terrible because it's just like down sampling your current look into like.
That's not great.
Yeah. It's open world now, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like you sail around a big ocean. There's all these levels that are a bunch of islands, and it doesn't quite work for me. I think there are some points where the fact that everything is connected works, but a lot of the time, it's also like, you could have just made a level select. I don't know.
Yeah, like I find it like I kind of like there being a distinction in games like this where you are playing levels and it's not just like because that was like sort of it's why I got bored of Super Mario Odyssey a lot of the time. It's just like it's just like they are separated into separate worlds, but it's just like it's just a big world with like 100 weird stupid little goals that don't really feel like a cohesive level.
Yeah, at least in this, like, there's only, like, usually, like, three kind of things per island set, where it's like, hey, there's a golden gear. I was laughing. It's like, it's
gear again. It's a chrono gear.
And then there's, like, usually an ability upgrade or, like, an outfit thing. So it's like, you get three things per set, usually. So it's like, nothing's too big.
Mm-hmm.
What else was I going to say? Basically, I need to rapid fire this much more. I really like this. I think the second kind of level set is the best part. It starts kind of slow and weak. I was like not really feeling it for the first few hours, but it definitely hits its groove later. And the climax is like actually really good.
Awesome. You'll like to see it. And it wasn't gated by, you know, go 100% the game.
They do have a thing for getting 100% of the golden gears, like a bonus level at the end if you do that. Mm-hmm. Also, I did actually 100% the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Not even just the golden gears, which is there's 45 of them, which is not unreasonable.
Nah, that's fine.
I got all the upgrades, all the clothing pieces, and all 1,500 demon coins.
Oh,
for
Lord.
No reason.
No reason.
Because I was just like, I like when it says 100% clear on each map.
I mean, sometimes it's just like... I don't remember if either of y'all played Infamous, but like that was a game where I just liked running around in that world, and there's just things. It's just like, I don't know, there's a thing over there. I'll just go grab it. And like sometimes it's just like the world feels fun enough to be playing around in where you just don't mind doing it. So I did that with Infamous. I nearly 100%ed it just because it was just like, oh, it's just fun moving around this world. I'll keep doing it.
I mean, you just kill people by moving in that game.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
You just start dashing and cars go flying and destroying people.
Man, Infamous. The first Infamous game was so fucking good.
Oh, wait. I'm thinking of Prototype.
Oh, well, I mean, all of these games that are like this, they all kind of... open world slop. Like, all of
those
these...
Those were both like... Yeah.
Yeah, those both came out at around the same time, so they get compared a lot. God. But yeah, it's very similar. Like, you absolutely can do a lot of the same things in Infamous.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, Demon Tides recommend.
Cool.
I watched an anime.
What'd you watch?
Yeah, I watched Sakamoto Days.
Oh.
And I was a little hesitant about this because it is a manga adaptation, and I've always been a little burned by those lately because they just kind of end in the middle with nothing truly being resolved.
Yeah.
Which, guess what this one did?
Oh, no.
Did it end in the middle with nothing truly resolved?
Kind of ended in the middle with nothing truly resolved, but they've announced the second season, so maybe in 2027 I'll be talking about season two.
All right.
But the start of this show is so fucking good that I didn't really mind it.
Mm.
The premise of this is that Sakamoto was the world's greatest hitman or assassin.
Mm-hmm.
And then he met a girl, fell in love, and retired. And then he gained weight. So he's not as... He's very funny looking now. But it's... So, like, I watched this because of a negative review I saw.
Oh, okay.
Because the negative review said, I thought this was going to be more like Spy Family, with a balance between the assassination stuff and the family stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And by season two, it's all assassination stuff.
All right.
Like, yes, it's all action, baby.
Let's go.
Spy Family drove me nuts because it's all family stuff. And I'm just like, like the one episode, like episode five had a pretty good action scene. And then I found out like they had punched up what was originally in the manga.
Oh, because we were watching this with test audiences and they were falling asleep.
No, people love that show.
I know. It's not for me. It's just like,
it's funny seeing like the one big Yor fight scene wasn't canon.
Yeah, it's punched up.
Really? the easily the best episode for me was the one where you deviated.
Mm-hmm.
But Sakamoto Days, very fun action comedy about this retired hitman. It gets really shonen later on is the thing I found out, though, where it's like not in a horrible way, but like it was kind of funny. By the time I hit season two, I was like, oh, it really is just all action now. And the family's like not even present. So I was starting to agree with the negative review a bit.
Oh.
Like, maybe the balance shifted a bit too much to, like,
right.
Oh, there's this shadowy organization that's trying to assassinate all the other assassins.
Oh, okay.
To bring about a new world order.
Power levels coming in.
Yeah.
And they use and they pay for it with golden coins that you can redeem for an assassination.
There's, like, lore to this that I'm not really aware of like... Assassinations are just a normal thing in this world because the police are so incompetent that...
That sounds pretty normal.
There's one part where they mention, like, the cops have, like, a 10% conviction rate.
Uh-huh.
So in order to actually, like, deal with criminals, you need the assassins.
Right.
It's a whole weird dystopia, really. But, like, there will be assassins fighting in the streets and normal people will just walk by without carrying
the doll. Yeah, I'll look. Also, another assassination. Yeah,
the show's really violent. Like, there's a lot of decapitations. So
hell yeah, let's go! Anime
usually shies away from that, but when it's Netflix funding it, hey, I don't think this aired on Japanese TV
for reasons. Yep.
Yeah, season one especially is a lot of fun. Good balance between the action and comedy. And then I played a game.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I played Donkey Kong Country Returns.
I've been wanting to play this one.
That one's a delight. I like that game.
This one's really cute, but I did play Tropical Freeze first.
That'll make it feel like a step back.
So it kind of felt like a step back. The one thing I was like, wow, he's so heavy in this one.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. The physics are really, really heavy in that.
The physics and the input. I'm not sure if it's input delay, but like animation delay. I'm like, damn, he's heavy. And it's like the last boss especially.
Oh, God. Yeah.
The last boss has the funniest cutscene I've ever seen, where it's a big floating tiki mask and then does like this big dramatic upgrade to reveal it has hands.
It's got hands.
The final boss is a floating mask with hands, like the most Nintendo villain of all time.
Yep.
But not usually the final boss.
That's usually
the twist. But it's just like, oh, like this was like the Kirby Superstar, like Great Cave Offensive boss. But anyways, he does an attack that like slams his hand down, like it hovers over you and then slams down. And your instinct would be to roll away from it because the roll is momentarily faster. But the roll has like such a delay in jumping afterwards that you can't jump and then hit the hand like as a counterattack.
No.
You just have to walk away from the slam attack and then you have enough time to jump on it afterwards. Yep. So like it's just very weird, like I looked up like, oh, was the input lag so bad on the Wii? And then I see on the Wii version, you had to shake the remote.
Yeah.
Roll.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, no, it was probably like 10 times worse.
Yeah, that was like my only real complaint about that game is that they really there's no way to not use the motion controls. I don't believe.
Insane. So, yeah, I played the Switch 2. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Donkey Kong Country Returns version 1.01.
Yeah.
In the spirit of Nier.
Yep.
Near Replicant version 1.22. Yeah. Also, they just added Dixie Kong.
Yeah, because.
From Tropical Freeze.
Why not? Dixie's pretty rad. Say,
there's just, I will say, because of how heavy the game is, the hover she gives you with like a half second of like, you keep sinking and then rise up.
Yeah.
It's just very good game feel. It feels purposeful in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Like it makes him feel really heavy, but then you're doing her spin to counteract that weight and then getting a little bit of extra.
It's a good bit of like they're playing with the gravity and making it feel nice.
Yeah. So having her there and Diddy, if you want, like I really like the upgrades like that they provide.
Mm-hmm.
Also the last two worlds though are mechanical themed and then lava themed, which is like, it's a Nintendo game.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, I think this came out in 2010, which is like very close to the Kirby game that I played, the remaster of last year, which also ends with mechanical level and lava level.
Return to Dreamland?
Yeah, doesn't it?
It ends with space level. Space world.
I mean, there's the big climax, but I thought the lava stuff was really close to the end.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, anyways. I think you might be right. I don't know. But you're right, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
It's also a fucking retro game. They were like, we're gonna do Metroid. How about Fire World, Snow World, Grass World?
Here's the desert world. Here's the water world.
Yeah, Donkey Kong Country Returns was fun.
Good. How does it compare with Kirby Return to Dreamland?
Oh, it doesn't.
Oh, nah.
I figured. Good.
Like, it's just, it's just kind of like spiced up Donkey Kong Country, really. Which, like, at the time when I played it, it was like, I hadn't played, you know, a Donkey Kong Country game in a while. So Donkey Kong Country Returns was, you know, like, Retro did a good job of just kind of bringing that spirit back.
Yeah. Cool. But it does its own things. Like, there's no underwater levels.
Yeah.
There's, like, I will say, I forgot to mention, the thing about these two games, and this one and Tropical Freeze, is they do such an amazing job making everything part of the world.
Yeah.
Like, every single floating platform will be connected to the
background, connected to something,
hung to a rope.
Yeah.
Like, nothing is not contextualized.
Like, oh, here's like a random floating platform.
And I think that's truly amazing that they go to that effort and then they still have floating barrels everywhere.
Yeah, I was about to say, what about the floating barrels?
The one thing, it's just those, though. That's what's so funny. Everything else, every other little interactable or, like, obstacle, and they get really creative with it, with, like, pirate ship in the background, like, throwing cannonballs at you, which then causes the platforms to sink and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, the lava level. I can't think of any specific examples, but it's, like, it's nonstop. And, like, the mountain level I thought was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And then but then they can't compromise floating barrels. They got to have that one thing
gotta
from
have
the original
it.
Games.
If it's a Donkey Kong game and I'm not jumping into a floating barrel, you did something wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you have to contextualize it or not. That's not the point.
They just were like, sorry, go ahead, John.
I just remember seeing shots of Donkey Kong in silhouette against like a sunset or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah, there are a few levels like that.
Cool. There's one of them is a bonus level in the first world, and it's just like, oh my god, this is so cool. And then there's two towards the end, which are also extremely cool.
Yeah, it's a real cool effect.
I think the first world 7-1 is a silhouette level, so it's really kind of effective because you haven't even seen the level proper yet.
Yeah.
And it just does the silhouette as the first level.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh. And then at the very end, you turn on a giant fan, and it blows away the fog, and it loses the silhouette effect.
It's really cool.
Oh, that's what the level looks like. I thought that was a really cool moment.
Yep.
Because it wasn't quite what I had envisioned in the
the
brown silhouette. Yeah, there's cool levels in there, but having played Tropical Freeze.
Yeah, Tropical Freeze is just kind of another level, like, at that point. Like, they had really taken that formula and just completely mastered it with Tropical Freeze.
I do think the Tropical Freeze bosses are such motherfuckers, though.
Oh, God, they are. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being, I think it was the final boss probably got really stuck on that one in Tropical Freeze. And then I watched an anime.
You watched an anime?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So I was looking through my anime list through like recent seasons to see if anything jumped out to me. And there were four shows that jumped out, and all of them happened to be in the 6th range.
Right.
And I'm just like, why am I just kind of attracted to the shows that nobody else likes? So I watched The Many Sides of Voice Actor Radio.
Uh-huh.
I will say this has a 6.9 on Mal, but it does have a 7.5 on Analyst.
Yeah.
So usually those are pretty close. I was surprised to see a whole half point difference
there. That's usually not the case.
That's one of the bigger swings I've ever seen. But this show is ridiculous because the first half is so drama filled. And it's like, it's about two high school girls who are secretly voice actors, and they happen to be in the same class. And they've got, like, personas that they use when they're voice acting and, like, different appearances. It's like, they're keeping it under wraps.
Yeah.
That's the premise of this show. And they throw that out, like, three episodes in because they get doxxed immediately. And they, like, drop the whole fake persona thing immediately. I'm just like, what is this show? You threw out your whole concept in episode 3. And then they have the most cringe scene I've seen in an anime in a while. Where their parents want them to quit voice acting because of the whole doxing thing.
Yeah.
Like, they're worried about stalkers. So they're like, if you can walk to the station, if you tweet that you're going to go to the station right now and then walk to it without anybody harassing you, we'll let you keep being voice actors.
Oh, no.
So they're making this walk, and there's just this huge crowd of people watching them. And then a hater will jump out and start to say something, and then a fan will run out and tackle the hater.
No!
And be like, no, you can't talk to them, or they'll have to give up being voice actors.
Oh my god.
It's, oh my god, it's like, I thought this was going to be a serious look at, like, voice acting.
Right.
And it's just the most overdramatic thing I've ever seen.
Oh my god.
It's just, I was, like, physically wincing. And then inexplicably, the second half of the show is actually about voice acting.
Okay.
It just it totally
just
pivots,
a
like,
weird pivots here. Yeah, the tone and mood sound completely all over the place.
It's so weird. The big climax, like final episode, is the main character voicing a scene, and like they're showing like the animatic, like the rough animation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no sound effects.
Right.
So the whole like climax is just dead silence, except for her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, for a show about voice acting, that's pretty good.
A real cool look at how ADR is typically done. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a very, you know, emotional scene where she's crying and like
mm-hmm.
really going through it. And she's not concerned about her voice acting not being good enough. So doing like a completely raw take is like, hey, this made me a little emotional.
Aw.
Even though this was also a show with like the most cringe scene I've ever seen. So I'm like, oh, this was a ride for sure.
That's really funny.
I'd maybe give it a 6.9.
Nice.
Then I played a game. It's called Tessa's RPG Nightmare.
Hey, I know that one.
We already talked about this one, though. I will say, I don't mean to be mean, but my favorite part was when you first walk out of that opening room
mm-hmm.
and see the NPCs walking around.
Yeah.
And they're just doing the dumbest shit. Like, there's just one dude facing a tree, like, walking towards it. There's a kid going nuts, like, as fast as you can get them moving.
Yeah.
And there's one dude walking in a circle repeatedly. Yep. And I'm just like, of course, the Polygame just has, like, these busted-ass NPCs.
I had a lot of fun.
And then a skeleton dork attack, like, starts yapping at you.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun writing Brad's dialogue.
Good.
I don't know if it got across, but the joke is he's deaf.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah, he says that your words will land on deaf and dead ears.
And
so like everything that she says to him during the course of the game, he never responds to. He's just monologuing.
Okay, I got that. I didn't take it really to me. He's literally deaf. I thought he was just not giving a shit.
Or when she goes and bangs on the door, like if you go to the tower before you actually get the thing that lets you get in the tower. Yeah. There's a fun gag where she'll bang on the door for 24 hours. And
that, I got that one.
He never answers because he can't hear you.
Oh my God. Oh, we're getting the lore here.
You're
now.
Getting the lore. Yeah. Yeah. Like that. It's like when I wrote that line, it was just like, it just sounds cool. But then I was like, no, wait a minute. What if he's just actually deaf and just keeps monologuing?
Well, then, I understand that character more now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very cute. Also, what the fuck is the rope guy's problem?
He's a dick. I just wanted
to write a guy
that was a dick no matter what. Even in the epilogue, he's just a dick.
Yeah. Even in the epilogue. I was going to say, games where you get to talk to everybody once more during the epilogue. Mm. Tessa's RPG Nightmare, yes. Silk Song, no. Yeah,
there you go. And that is why that's why Tessa's RPG Nightmare is better than Hollow Knight Silk Song.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's obvious. I had a lot of fun writing character dialogue in that game.
I kind of wanted, you know, Isomnium Files has that one ending.
Mm-hmm.
If when you keep talking to the receptionist,
yeah.
I thought this was going to have something like that.
I almost did it with the mayor's wife. I reached the end and I was like, I could feel myself starting to like burn a little bit. And I was just like, I could do this. I want to throw this in and do like a really elongated thing of them leaving and like having a little time together. And I was just like, I just kind of
get this finished.
I want to get it finished. I think that I've reached the end of my creativity on this project. Yeah, I almost did that for the mayor's wife, though. Yeah, there was almost that ending that's a fake out ending.
I saved just in case it was there. And then finally, I watched an anime.
Jesus Christ, dude! It's been 3 weeks.
This is what I'm saying. I told you. Shonen moment to where the character that's been wearing a certain outfit the whole time drops it to the ground, and then you realize it's like a weighted outfit. They're dropping 50 pounds of like training material, and it does a huge cloud, dust a cloud. I have been unshackled.
You did everything in 3 weeks.
I told you I was held back by Hollow Life, and then I was held back by Betrayals.
Yeah, it's very fucking clear. It's like six years of content flowed endlessly into the Rhett.
We fit two glop jokes in one podcast.
God damn!
So I watched one more anime. This was called Dusk Beyond the End of the World. This is another six score banger.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you just want to root for a show, and it doesn't come together.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is by PA Works.
Oh, man.
And it's an original.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they did Hanasaka Iroha. Yeah. They did Shirobaka.
Mm-hmm.
Shirobako. I forget which one it is. Like, they've got a really good track record.
They got a track record.
With their originals.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's got End of the World in the title.
That's always a good thing.
Right. It's a science fiction story about the perils of AI, apparently.
Oh.
But it just doesn't work. Like, it doesn't know what it's going to be. It's balancing way too many, like, is it an action show? Is it a love story? Is it a drama?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a road trip? And it kind of tries to be everything at once. And there's one point, like, a couple episodes from the end where they do a kind of a big surprising thing, and I'm like, yes, I like where you went here. And then the next two episodes are like, just kidding. Fuck your favorite character.
Oh.
She's the villain now for no reason.
Jeez.
And there's not blood related relationships between siblings.
All right. All over this.
So there's this like weird incestual themes.
I think we're fine with that.
It's just a little uncomfortable. Also weird is when, like, so, like, the world ends and it's, like, 200 years later.
Sure.
And they've got a new, marriage doesn't exist anymore, but they've got a new concept that is very, basically, like, polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, hey, you can marry anyone you want.
All right.
As many people as you want. So, like, the first thing you see is, like, four women getting hitched together.
Let's go.
So it's like, okay, that's interesting. And then the two main characters are like, no.
No, they're going to be like, oh, marriage no. only. No.
It's just awkward having that be.
Yeah. The main
characters are just like, no. And then maybe changing their mind for literally no plot reason in the last 30 seconds.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah.
Sounds like kind of a mess. Like, it just didn't know what it wanted to do.
It definitely didn't know what it wanted to be. There's a few good scenes of like, girl with lightsaber just chopping up like 100 soldiers.
All right.
I almost sent that clip to you with like Star Wars if it was cool. But yeah, it missed the mark. I would actually give the voice actor show the higher score.
Ooh, okay.
Because man, I looked at the forums afterwards to see what people thought of it, and like, yeah, they had some pretty valid complaints about the pacing and like the main character just getting everything he wanted without working for any of it. That kind of show.
No.
Yeah.
Bleh.
So that's...
Bleh.
I've been watching another anime, but I'm not done yet, so that's where we can leave it for now.
All right. Rhett and his big 40-minute extravaganza...
Oh, did it take...
Has concluded.
To do a timer.
I don't know. I'm just throwing a number at it. No, this was a delight. Like, there were a lot of things there that had a lot of things Absolutely. To discuss. So, no, like, that.
Okay.
Cool. So, that is going to do it for another episode of the SoxCast. Of course, thanks, everybody, for listening. We always love it when you give us your time. But before we scoot on out of here, John, why don't you tell the fine folks at home where they can find you?
Oh, shit.
John, we end this podcast the same way every single time.
Yeah, this
I know. I'm doing a different thing, Rhett. Fuck.
Okay.
You can go to itch.io/jam/cookie-cutter-rm2k3-jam.
Okay.
Play all these games. They're so fucking cool.
Yeah.
You can actually, all right, it's all linked. It's linked to my blog.
It's all linked
Just go to
there.
farawaytimes.com.
Cool. And Rhett, what you got this time? Where can we find you?
Twitter.com/Rhett.
There you go. He's still using Twitter. Oh. He don't care. He'll buck the system.
He's posting about one thing and one thing only right now still.
Anime titties.
No.
Oh.
That's hard.
Anyways, where can we find you, Polly?
You can find me at socksmakepeoplesexy.itch.io. Go play Tessa's RPG Nightmare.
Oh.
I think it's a delight.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to do it for us. Thanks so much for stopping by. We hope you have a nice rest of your whatever, wherever you are. And we will catch you right back here next time. But until then, please remember that we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.